Like to call the House Fisheries Committee to order on March 10th, 2009. The time is approximately 10:20. Committee members in attendance, to my right, are Representative Book, Vice Chair Keller, to my left, Representative Johnson, Representative Millet, and Representative Kawasaki.
Morning.
Chair Hitchman is here as well, we hope. As you might have noticed, the original notice for today's session was to include consideration of Judge Carl Johnstone's qualification in terms of being appointed to the Board of Fisheries. Given the length of time that we expect with HJR 21 and hearing from the sponsor and his desire to sort of expedite the debate on the resolution, giving the pending council action on the matter in early April, we have set aside Mr. Johnstone's hearing, and we'll do that at a later time. We hope, however, today to resume hearing House Bill 143, which is the no repeal of sports fishing license bill, and we'll likely get to that towards the latter part of the hearing today. So with that, any comments or questions from committee members before we begin today's session? Not hearing any. Representative Osterman, would you like to come to the table, please, and identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Alan Osterman. I'm representative from District 36, which includes Kodiak Island and part of the Lake Penn area of Lake Eliamna. Thank you for hearing the bill today. There is a time frame that I'm looking at trying to get this resolution done and moved through both the House and Senate to present it to the North Pacific Council at their first of April meeting. The resolution is fairly simple in its form, in that we're looking to try to convince the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which is the federal agency that controls the fishing fisheries off of our shores outside of 3 miles. And over the years, the North Pacific Council has managed and set up systems for managing their fisheries offshore. And most of those programs turn out to be a type of fishery that ends up being rights-based. The fishermen themselves end up owning the fishery, and or they become access limited to the ability of young Alaskans to get into the fishery. In the Gulf of Alaska, both in what they call the Central Gulf and in the Western Gulf, the one fishery that's really open and still open for the ability for young Alaskans and other Alaskans to get into fisheries is the cod fishery in the Gulf. And that cod fishery in the Gulf is divided among two sectors, basically, the trawl industry and then the fixed gear. The fixed gear, which ends up being pot fishermen and long line hook. And then there's a jig fishery that is also a part of the cod fishery in the Gulf. The initial action that the council was taking and looking at was to limit or to eliminate about 65% of the what they call LLPs, limited license permit. And the limited license permit was put in place in around 2000 to get some control on the number of boats fishing and entrance into the cod fishery in the Gulf of Alaska. There is approximately 800 and some permits that were issued initially, and they could be anybody that made a landing, could land one fish prior to 2000, and they would have gotten an LLP. And so there are approximately 300 plus boats out of the 800 plus that are currently fishing or active, making landings within the time frames that they're setting up. And part of the way that the North Pacific Council operates is they usually set up and allocate their resources or the quota based upon fishing history. And so right now they're looking at a number of different variable options within this action of limiting the Gulf of Alaska cod fishing from, say, 2000 to 2006 or 2000 to 2007. there's a variable options within their, what they're looking at how they're going to limit the amount of fishing or limited permits that are going to be out there. Initially, as I said, they had said they were going to just eliminate 65% of those permits and leave about 45% fishing and active fishermen. They have, over the time period of probably been 6 years they've been looking at this, they have reduced, or they have changed their idea. Now they're looking at what they call an endorsement. If you have fished cod within those time periods and have made a landing of cod, then you will get this endorsement. And then they're going to leave all the other licenses there. And they're actually LLPs or for ground fish. The original LLP was issued for ground fish. And now they want to put this endorsement on it for just cod.
Rep. Sambuk.
Through the chair. Representative Osterman, these endorsements are really acting as a restriction then. Could you clarify that?
Yes. Well, if they go with the endorsement on the current people who are active or have that history, and those are the only ones that get to see endorsement, they're the only ones that will be able to fish cod. That's right. So it is a restriction. Yes.
Okay.
Everybody else that will still have those LLPs for ground fish can fish other ground fish if there's a season. Right now, in the fixed gear, particularly the pot and the long line gear and the hook gear, the only thing they're fishing is cod. There is no other fishery that they're currently fishing. There is some flatfish that they have the potential fishing, or maybe at some point in time in the distant future they could go after squid or octopus or I don't know what. But right now it really is basically cod that we're talking about. So yes, it is a restriction, and it would only allow those guys that get that endorsement to go cod fishing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So that 65% reduction and only 45% of them with the cod endorsements, if you can think about how supply and demand works in our own system, is that those who get that 45% then will be able to set the value of what they get. So they'll be receiving a cod endorsement, they'll be receiving the ability to then be the only fisherman that can fish cod in that fixed gear sector of the fishery. So if somebody else wants to get into it, then they've got to go to these guys that got the 45% and buy a permit. And that is where we come up to some of the rub in why we're asking the council through this resolution not to go to the endorsement, just leave it open as an open fishery, as an access fishery for people to get into the fishery. It's interesting when you look at the jig fishery, which is also an open fishery. But it's basically started out with the guys that could put a jig machine on their skiff, and that was the concept of what they were talking about. Then that has developed into five jig machines on like a salmon boat or a limited seiner. So that is one way of getting into it. The other way is to have them to be able then to step up into pot fishing or into long length fishing. And so it's kind of a natural step. And as I indicated earlier in my testimony, this is the last fishery in Alaska that is still open, basically open enough that as a limited entry program that people can get into, very similar to what our salmon industry is. I kind of equate it to, well, people argue against my ideas, but I equate it to the salmon industry. If on Kodiak Island, if you got 300 and I'm not exactly on my numbers, but 350 or 380 permits for seine boats, and only 150 of them are currently fishing because of the price of salmon and the industry and the cost of fuel and insurance and all the rest of that stuff. We're going to go in and eliminate all those boats that aren't fishing salmon right now. We're just going to take their permits away from them. And obviously, we do different things in Alaska than they do in the federal government, in the federal side. We wouldn't let that happen. You know, we would protect them. Our Constitution doesn't allow us to give our resource away like the federal government is allowed to do in a number of the fisheries that they've done. My objective here is to hold this last vestige of fishing in the Gulf of Alaska, in the cod fishery, to have reasonable access to the fishery by young upstart fishermen. And that's the basis of the whole resolution. It's, again, as the chairman has spoken, I'm trying to get this done and move it forward because the final action on this is supposed to take place in the 1st of April in Anchorage at the North Pacific Council. With that, I'll stop and answer questions.
Thank you, Representative Osterman. Questions, committee members, for the bill sponsor? Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Osterman. Can you tell me what traditionally, I mean, are there experiences where this has happened in the past, and what traditionally has happened to the mix of local versus, I know it's federal water, so there is no outside, but say a lower 48 versus Alaskan fisheries, can you tell me, does it cause a shift, more commercial, more industrial type fishing as opposed to the smaller fishing, and which I would think typically would be more an Alaskan resident?
The only thing that I can equate to myself would be more draconian instances where, like in the halibut IFQ, where they actually went to an individual fishing quota where they gave that portion of the quota to somebody that they could then sell and trade and do what they want with or fish it. And in some degrees, when you narrow down the number of permits, even in a limited license permit system like is done right now with the COD and the federal side, by removing or by putting endorsements on only 45% of them, then you get the same basic thing of totally limiting down the access and ability for people to get into it. Part of the problem that we're facing with this whole thing is that the time frame that they've got on the 2000 to 2007 even, for the last 2 years, there's other people who have gotten into the fishery. You know, they've bought permits, they've gone and paid a few dollars for a permit and bought a bunch of pots and went fishing. There's a number of those permits right now that will be excluded. They'll automatically, in final action of this, they'll automatically lose their permits even though they've made the investment into it. So we're trying to reach that ground where we're trying to protect Alaskans and give them the ability to get into the fishery at a future date. Now, limited entry in salmon is basically the same type of thing that we're talking about here, but in limited entry in salmon, we're not talking about eliminating 50% of them or 60% of them.
Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Osterman, can you speak to the trend of the federal government and how that's relating to what we're trying to do here?
There's a lot of history at the North Pacific Council in fisheries, and it goes back a long way. And the normal trend for the North Pacific Council has been to figure out a way to turn these fisheries over to fishermen, basically, and get out of the management scheme. If they don't have any responsibility for the fisheries, and the fishermen themselves have that responsibility, then it eliminates a lot of their management potential or ways of doing. The American Fishery Act basically took in the pollock fishery, narrowed it down to about 7 or 8 boats that go pollock fishery. Most everybody didn't get excited about that when the federal government did that or out of Washington, D.C., because it was large boats weren't Alaskans that were in that fishery. The halibut IFQ is another way of looking at how the fishery was taken and put into an IFQ where individual ownership went to the fishermen themselves, basically. The crab, Bering Sea crab, that most of you heard about, that ended up being not only just the fishermen, but then the processors ended up having the ability to dictate where 90% of that crab was delivered to the process. To specific processors rather than individual fishermen being able to move their crab around and sell it at wherever they want. So I think there's a long history of it. Again, I think that the cod in the Gulf of Alaska is really were narrowed down to the last fishery that is not controlled so well that people have to get into it. And I was reading an article the other day that said you got to be a millionaire to get into the halibut fishery anymore just because of the price of that quota went so high. of course, the investment in boat and gear and all the rest of that stuff that goes along with it. So we need to have some type of ability for people to step up into the fisheries, and this is one of them.
Thank you.
Representative Osterman, do we have any sense of how many fishermen have entered into the fishery in the last few years, as you described a moment ago, and maybe how many of them are Alaskans?
No, I don't have that information. That's not part of the analysis that the federal government or the North Pacific Council has done. There are several people who have approached me since I introduced this resolution that said that is part of their goal, is to get the council to step back and take a look at that number. And my discussions this morning with the Commissioner of Fish and Game, who also sits on North Pacific Council, he said that is something that they are actually looking at, and I asked him whether there was a possibility of delaying final action at this meeting in April to give their staff at North Pacific Council the time to do the analysis on those numbers, and then maybe at their next meeting do final action. But that is not something that's within the analysis now, so I don't have a number on it, no. I have been contacted by a number of people who say they're in that position, but I don't have a total number now.
Well, what would your response be, Representative Osterman, as the bill sponsor to, I've got the council's analysis here in front of me, and alternative one is to take no action, and basically what the analysis suggests that if you keep the participation open, you're in essence sort of diluting the revenue stream for the existing participants. You're also, I guess, increasing their costs, and you're really sort of harming the participants who have been longtime fishermen who put a lot of money into their businesses and would really like to see a fishery that's managed in a manner that's similar to the other rationalized fisheries throughout the state.
There's a lot of interpretation as to what a rationalized fishery is. And in my view, salmon is a rationalized fishery. And so I think that just about every fishery, the cod fishery right now is a rationalized fishery. They've limited the number of permits that they've issued, the limited LLPs. There's 800 and some of them. They're not going to issue any more. They want to reduce the number of participants. If I'm in the drugstore business and down the street comes Walmart, do I have the protection of the government that tells me that I can stay in business and I'm going to get a certain percentage of the drugstore business in the community based upon the fact that I'm being competed against by a global entity? We don't do that. Now, why do we do that in the fishery business? I don't understand the difference in a lot of respects. This is a common public resource that sits out there. And why do we give it away on a constant basis? I don't understand that concept. So I appreciate the fact that guys are in business and they're making, they're having a difficult time making it because the price of cod is down right now. And I can understand if I was in the business, maybe I'd want that protection as well. But from my perspective, I don't understand that. And I can't. They went into the business, make an investment, knowing that this was a competitive business, and to come along later and try to protect them because they may get economically hurt. And as I indicated in my initial discussions, the North Pacific Council has, over time, developed this idea that you can allocate these fisheries based upon catch history. And so right now, these guys that are currently fishing in the Gulf are feeling some pressure from boats coming in and fishing for history. There are boats that have making a good money out in Bristol Bay or the Bering Sea on one fishery. They're moving over into the Gulf because they're fishing for history right now. My objective here is for the North Pacific Council to stand up and say, wait a minute, stop fishing because we're not going to give you any of this fishery based upon history. And if the council can set up and do that, that changes the whole dynamics of how the North Pacific Council has been working. It protects Alaskans. It gives the ability for people to still get into the fishery. It removes those boats that will then quit fishing for history because they're not making any money at it now. They're only fishing for history. So they would basically move out of the fishery because there's no reason for them to continue to fish and try to get the history. So they get the permit that they can then have a value to it to sell it. So if we can stop that, we've created quite a good deed.
Any further questions from committee members for Representative Osterman? Not seeing any. Representative, if you want to sit at the table with us, we'd certainly appreciate you being involved. Do we have anyone, I don't see here in the room, but anyone online from the council who desires to testify today? The North Pacific Fishery Council. Do we have anyone from the Department of Fish and Game? Well, not hearing any, let's go to public testimony. I don't presume that that we have anyone from a state or federal agency then, and I'm just going to walk down the list, and we've got a number of people in Kodiak who are online today, and as each of you come to the mic, would you please identify yourself, your name, and your affiliation for the record, please, and let's start with Julie Bonney. You there, Julie?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Fishery Committee. My name is Julie Bonney, and I represent the members of Alaska Groundfish Data Bank. I want to refer you to, I sent you a rather substantial comment letter, and it basically goes through and looks at several issues in terms of this package that the North Pacific Management Council is looking at. And I just wanted to point out that the reality is if this action actually moved forward, it would actually increase the amount of Alaska ownership for the licenses that remained in the pool. It would also advantage smaller vessels under 60 foot that would have more licenses than in terms of the pool than they do now. It would also remove a large percentage of the catcher processor licenses that compete with the catcher vessel sector for the available cod. But I guess the bigger questions is, and this answers a lot of questions, and I don't have, 3 minutes isn't going to give me enough time to go through it. But if you really want to get into the fish allocation business, I'd suggest that you start thinking about lots of meetings and committees, because I would guess that in the council arena, we probably talked about this issue for 100 hours. And it really, I think that it gives disservice to the public, because we really don't have an opportunity to interact with you on an individual basis, or do you have the time to read all the different analyses to figure out whether this is good or bad for the different constituents. But I wanted to go through a little bit of the history in Kodiak. Kodiak has always been opposed to limitation in fisheries. If you go back and look at the old newspapers when salmon limit entry went into place, Kodiak was the one community that was absolutely opposed. When halibut IFQs came about in the council, they had a demonstration in Kodiak with somewhere over 600 individuals that were opposed to that action. And that's because we're a fishing community and everybody wants to have access. But the reality is, with fish management, we've got to think about the sustainability of the resource, the management structure that makes sense, and also the ability for people to make a living in those fisheries. And just leaving it open for everyone, the resource is not unlimited, and it just functionally it doesn't work. If we went back to the halibut days and went derby fishing, it probably be 1 or 2 hour fishery, because there'd be so many participants. So I guess from my view is there's a lot of issues that you guys as the legislature could get involved with. In terms of fisheries, I've got several things on my list, one of which is the loan program that you put together for the small coastal communities, rural communities that are under 1,500 individuals. The loan program that you guys put together for them to buy IFQ halibut is not functional, because the interest rate is too high and the down for that is too much. The other issue that we've been facing in the North Pacific Management Council is the observer program in the Gulf, and we need funding for that of about $5 million to have a robust observer program. So those would be some of my other issues for fish that I'd like to see you approach. But I guess the overall issue is this is the Balance Act, and I think the council has really strived forward to try to balance the historical participants and then also access to cod. And if you really look at all the other ways that you can enter the cod fishery, it's not just with a PCOD endorsement. We have the state cod fishery that has 25% of the overall quota that's available for anybody to fish in the state. So I've run out of time, but and like I said, 3 minutes on an issue like this just isn't enough time. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie, and appreciate your being brief with your comments. Any questions from committee members? Not seeing any. Jeff Steffen, are you there? Jeff?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, good morning. My name is Jeffrey Steven, and I'm here representing the United Fishermen's Marketing Association. And we would like to go on record in opposition to HJR 21. We feel that actually the actual effect of that will worsen the situation, worsen many of the economic, social, and cultural characteristics of the community and those objectives that I think that we all wish to protect. I would like to say something about access for participation for new entrants and young entrants. And we are concerned about that also. We have been involved for many years in the development of this initiative, and we have done everything that we could within reason to try to provide opportunities for new entrants and for young entrants and folks that did not have history. And I'd like to point out that the total allowable catch, or the quota, as many times it's referred to, 25% of the cod quota in the Gulf of Alaska is reserved exclusively for state waters fishery, and there are absolutely no restrictions on entry. So, you know, and these things are not, and I take Julie's point that I mean, we'd like to be able, if you get into this, we'd really like to be able to sit down and really explain to you, you know, what this means and how it's been structured and some of the details of this. I think that the resolution itself misportrays the real situation and leads you to believe that this is a rationalization or that it is consolidation of the fleet, that it is individual transferable quotas, and those things are not the case. In fact, we have worked specifically to avoid those types of initiatives. But you have 25% of state waters that is exclusively reserved to the state, and anybody can enter that. Anybody can enter that. You also have the jig fishery, which is open to entry. And then you have the parallel fishery, which is that portion of the federal fishery that occurs inside state waters that is also not restricted. And anyone, whether you have a license or not, is permitted in there. And so there is a tremendous opportunity here. What we're seeking through the endorsement to action is to try to get some stability for the communities, for the fishery, for the fishermen and those people who have participated. This is nothing. I also like to mention to you that these 800 permits were established around 1995. This action was taken by the council in 95. I think you needed just any delivery of codfish or groundfish prior to 95 to get a permit. And so really you have a whole bunch of folks out there that hold these LLPs that you know, haven't been in the fishery. And this is really nothing more than like Tanner Crab Limited Entry, Salmon Limited Entry, Herring Limited Entry, and my 3 minutes is up. So thank you very much, and I'm grateful for your attention. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. And sorry about mispronouncing your last name. For all the years I've known you, I've always thought it was Steffen, so I'm duly corrected, and appreciate you also being brief. Next, we have Alexis Kwachka. If I came close to pronounce your name right. Alexis, will you please come forward?
Yeah, my name's Alexis Kwachka. I'm representing myself. I have a completely different take on this. And what we've seen is privatization of all our fisheries, and I feel like this LLP reduction will be just a stepping stone to further privatization. The next step will be sector splits, and after that will be an IFQ issue down the road. There's been a lot of economical downturn in our communities from access, limited access, and what I see happening in the future is young guys are not going to have the finances to enter these fisheries. I can't afford. I participated in pre-IFQs for halibut. I can't make IFQs for halibut pencil out. Codfish, for coastal communities in Alaska and the Gulf, particularly in Kodiak, it's a combination fish that allows a guy, if he's having a marginal salmon fishery, he can go out and go cod fishing. and he needs the ability to do this. My concern now is that we really don't have a plan on what we want our fishing communities to look like. You know, we're talking about protecting individual businesses. What we need to do is talk about what we want our fishing communities to look like in the future. And the council process doesn't really take that up. And that's my concern. So I will be supporting HJR 21. I'll leave it short.
Yep. Thank you, Alexis. Next, Ryan Johnson. Would you please state your name and affiliation, please?
Hi, my name's Ryan Johnson, and I'm here representing myself. I've been a cod fisherman here in Kodiak and a homeowner and a resident since 1997. I worked a lot of winters on my small 38-foot boat pulling pots. I had an LLP for my boat, and I have earned history on that LLP, but these LLPs are restricted by length. And in January of 2008, I decided to buy a slightly larger boat that is hardly impactful to the fishery. It's a 48-foot boat, and it came with an LLP that I also paid dollars for. And I expect to be able to continue my participation in this fishery. It's crucial to my business plan. I have extensive investment in pots, crab blocks, launchers, bait choppers, and now a very expensive boat with a mortgage that I need to be able to service. And fishing cod in federal waters is an integral part of my business plan. So you might say that I sort of represent the type of person who's fallen through the cracks on this. I am a participant, and I deserve to be able to continue to be a participant. And I also feel very strongly for my younger fishermen in this town who are also struggling to make it. You know, these other folks like to speak about all of the opportunity that there is in the cod fishery, and in fact, there really is not. Jig fishing is not a living, it's a piece of the pie, much like pulling pots in federal waters for cod is for me. And I need to maintain my access, so I wholeheartedly support HJR 21. Thank you very much.
Linda Kozak, would you please come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Linda Kozak. I'm a fisheries consultant in Kodiak. I work with fixed gear, pot, and longline fishermen. And my family also has a set net operation at Eacock Beach in the Nooshigak District of Bristol Bay. I grew up in Dillingham, and I'm very familiar with limited entry programs. And I have some concerns about the resolution. It's very confusing. Representative Osterman said that in his opening comments that it is fairly simple. It is not a simple resolution. It confuses rationalization with limited entry. And for most people, the concept of rationalization is a more individual catch accounting program, which is IFQs or cooperatives. This council action has been addressed for probably a little over 2.5 years, where we are actually looking at creating endorsements, specific cod endorsements, only for those individuals who ever directed fishing on cod. Nobody who has fished for cod would be left out under one of the alternatives, which is through December of 2008, which I support. And I would just urge the members of the committee to review the extensive comments that I have submitted in regard to the history of the issue, the agency authority, how things progress in limited entry programs for salmon. I am very glad we have limited entry for salmon. I know the Tanner Crab fishermen in Kodiak that petitioned recently to CFEC for limited entry are glad they have limited entry for Tanner Crab. And as Representative Osterman said, the Pacific cod fishery in the Gulf of Alaska is the last one. And that should be a warning bell right now for you folks that if those people who are dependent and have historical participation in this fishery are not protected, big money from Seattle could come in right now and buy up these licenses and bring in boats that could effectively compete and drive these people out of business, and I don't want to see that happen. I think that the action before the council will actually protect Alaskans and will help to create a more stabilized fishery. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Linda. Next, we have Jerry Bongan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I want to concur with Linda's comment that comparing this recency action to rationalization, I think, grossly misrepresents the intent of this action. In the past, fishery policy action rationalization has been used in fishery policy to award catch history to individuals, boats, co-ops, etc. This action in no way attempts to do that. A vast majority of these LLPs that were generated by the LLP action back in 1995 were not generated by directed landings of peacod. They were generated by incidental landings of peacod that were required in other fisheries, such as the halibut fishery, the black cod fishery. There was no intent on these people's part. There was just kind of a windfall for them that these LLPs even appeared. This fishery is fully prosecuted. This year, the fishery ended before February 1st. I believe it was February or January 27th. The fall season ended on, before the 1st of November. We really need a recency action here to stabilize the fishery. At present, there are less than 100 pot boats that participate in the Central Gulf fishery. Of those 100 boats, there's a half a dozen boats less than 50 feet that have made any kind of recent cod landing. For a person entering this fishery and to be able to be economically viable, he basically needs a 50-foot or greater boat. For a person to come up with a sum of money for that, you're looking at somewhere between $400,000 and $500,000 at a minimum to enter this fishery. Without some sort of economic stability to allow young fishermen to be able to make that step, I just don't see how. I mean, by leaving it open, you're diminishing the opportunities for young fishermen to enter this. Groomen need, and this fishery needs a stable fishery to be able to earn the money that will allow them to enter this fishery. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jerry. For the record, can you identify your affiliation?
I'm a part owner with an owner-operator of the fishing vessel Genoa. It's pot fished in the Central Gulf since 1987.
So essentially you're representing yourself then. Al Birch, are you there, Al?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Somebody's going to have to tap me on the shoulder 3 minutes because I can't hear bells anymore after so many years in the engine room.
We'll do our best, sir.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, we've sent a couple letters down to the committee. Evidently, they haven't arrived there, so I'd like to read these for the record. The first one is from the Alaska Whitefish Trawlers Association. The Alaska Whitefish Trawlers Association urges you do not support HJR 21. Alaska Whitefish represents approximately 40 trawl vessels that fish out of Kodiak. The resolution seeks to stop the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council's consideration of recency amendment package regarding the Pacific cod fisheries in the Gulf of Alaska. The NPFMC's recency amendment package seeks to protect those fishermen who have historically fished Pacific cod while establishing a clear path for the future entrance into the fisheries. At the same time, it allows new entrance to the fisheries. It protects the interest of those who took all the risks and financial commitments to develop and set the foundations for the Kodiak cod fisheries. Another big consideration regarding HJR 21 is that it puts the legislature in the position of regulating and making decisions on fisheries that are most appropriately handled by the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council and by the Alaska Board of Fish. The resolution puts the legislature smack dab in the middle of fish allocation issues that will pit Alaskans against Alaskans. It is not an appropriate place for legislators, nor is it appropriate to manage fish allocations by issues by legislative resolution. It sets a bad precedent you for your consideration. That was from the Trawlers Association. If I still have time, this is from me personally. I've lived in Alaska since the territorial days, 40 years here in Kodiak. I have fished Alaska waters for more than 50 years. I've also been involved in fish politics and familiar with the process of fish management conducted by the Board of Fish and the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. I'm a 27-year member on the advisory panel for the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. I just retired from that. Is my time up? Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I was just handed a note by the committee secretary reminding me that if you have any additional comments or notes that you want faxed to the committee, that can certainly take place as well from the LIO office there in Kodiak.
Okay, I'll leave these here at the office because evidently some of the stuff that's been emailed or faxed down to your committee haven't arrived there. Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks for your time and testimony today, Al. Next, we have Stephen Toffin.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the legislature. My name is Stephen Toffin, and I'm the founder of the Groundswell Fisheries Movement, which started out to recover the $2 billion shortfall every year in Alaskan fisheries due to the global structure of the corporations involved, their international tax strategies. I also am an input-output economist, which did work for 20-some countries for Pacific Northwest tree fruit industry for 7 or 8 years. And I have a long history in fish processing in Alaska, financial management. And I now represent the citizen taxpayers. And, you know, when I first saw the word rationalization show up in Alaska fisheries, I understood immediately what it was because it has a 150-year-old history. It is the substitution of globalized corporations extracting the wealth and subjecting peoples to their whip in order to serve their stockholders and their strategies. It is the destruction of local, economic, sustainable agricultural systems globally. And it put the fear of God in me. And there is a vast difference between being rational, as if that word is a goal, and the kinds of rationalization management schemes, which is their proper term, the ism, the ideology of privatization in the North Pacific Fish Council. Being rational is annual privileges. It's taking a look at local sustainability. Rationalization is the privatization of a public asset. John Maynard Keynes called it asset commoditization. It is to take and pull all the future values into the present day, and it does not resolve overcapitalization. It causes it. It has caused hundreds of millions of dollars from investor class people to come into our fisheries, yet do nothing actually for the operation of those fisheries. Being rational concentrates on sellers having control. That's why the IFQ program works so well to raise halibut prices in our state. Rationalization is to serve a buyer's cartel. Being rational is public serving. It serves the public commons. Rationalization is to remove from the public commons the people's rights, as if to air, salt, water. When will it stop? To serve a few investor class people intended on getting rich. You know, a lot of people wonder where the value is, but there was testimony given years ago at the council that showed 7 years of groundfish values in Japan ports versus U.S. ports, and those numbers in Japan ports for the same kind of fish were 2.4 to 3.8 times higher. What Alaska has failed to do, and there are 23 states or so in this nation that are united, is Alaska has failed to have a Resource Accountability and Transparency Board and Trade Oversight Committee, and I support HJR 21 as a way to slow things down and give you folks a chance to join the modern world. Thank you, especially for the activists.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Stephen. Next, we have Sean Doctorman. Sean, are you there?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning,
Chairman Edgman and the members of the Special House Fish Committee. I'm Sean Dockerman, 31-year fisherman, second-generation fisherman on Kodiak, fished multiple species between St. Matthews, Bering Sea, Bristol Bay, Aleutians, and here in the Gulf of Alaska. I'd like to support HGR 21 as it does what protects the communities in the state of Alaska and the future fishermen that are not going to have the chance to participate in the future. That's why we're sitting here with this resolution to the council, because the council has not actually followed the mandates of Magnuson-Stevens they're going after not just conservation, they're trying to follow conservation, but everything has hidden agenda. And the scheme here is to hand out privileges for the future for past participants when they've already made profits, they've already written off things off their taxes from their benefits and their depreciation of their vessels and quotas and such. So here I am getting my vessel ready for jigging cod in the state waters. We don't have access to the federal waters due to LLP exemption. And I don't even know if it's going to be viable for me to go out fishing due to the price of fuel and the price of bait. And the price of cod's dropped to about 50% in the last year. So what I'm seeing here in the room, we're seeing people that are looking to have the access right for the future. And are they going to participate in the fishery, go put their boots on and go to work? I don't think so. I think that's the problem here, the disconnect of boots on fishermen not having the privilege to go fishing, while those that want a golden parachute of retirement and have the privilege and that access that will never be accessible for anybody else in the future. So that's why I'm here to speak up and say that push this thing through. You know, the legislature does have a good say in it. This is the North Pacific Council is watches over the state of Alaska, not the West Coast, not anywhere else. So I urge you to push this bill through. I will be sending my comments to the Special Fish Committee and the legislature, urging them to further this. So I appreciate your time here. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Do we have anyone else at the Kodiak LIO who wishes to testify this morning?
There are no other members that would like to testify.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next, we'll move to the Matsu LIO. David Polishkin, are you there?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is David Polishkin. I'm representing the Cape Bay Fisheries Association and Corporation. We're all Alaska residents and small boat fishermen. All of our members are longline and drift salmon fishermen. We have 44 members in our association, and all of our members are owner-operators of 50 feet and under boats. All the members participate in the peak cod fishery during the federal seasons. We have members that live in Willow, Alaska, Wasilla, Nikolaevsk, Kachemak Silo, Voznesenka, Razdolna, Afognak, villages of the Russian communities. We oppose HJR 21 as it is not productive for the legislature to insert themselves into complex fishery management issues. In HJR 21, there are misrepresentations and incorrect assertions, such as consolidation of vessels, reduction of participants, elimination of crew jobs. It is totally false because the LLP recency action that the council will take will actually save crew jobs, protect longtime local Alaska fishermen that have been dependent on peacod fishery, protect small boat owner operators from being pushed out of the fishery by bigger so-called super 58 footers that have just recently started fishing and are taking a bigger chunk of the tack. With the current final action that the council is considering, there will still be anywhere from 110 to 306 permits that will qualify. With this action, there will be more than enough participation that will protect the resource and the historical participants that rely on the fishery. There is assertion that the fishermen will not be able to enter into the fishery. That is not true. They can enter the fishery by fishing in state waters that are inside 3 miles. You do not need an LLP in state waters. This is nothing new that is just coming down the pike. This has been discussed for a long time, people knew that something was going to happen. yet they still chose not to participate in the fishery. It shows that they do not rely on the fishery. There is assertion that all supporters are big boat owners that are ready to retire, which is far from the truth. Majority of our members are under 48 years of age and are all small boat owner operators. We do not support AJR 21 and urge you to let the council process work as it is intended and formed for this task as manager of our resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Plushkin. Do we have anyone else at the Matsu LIO for testimony this morning?
Not on this one. On your next bill. Thank
you. Anyone else, period, online who wishes to testify?
Homer has one.
Yes, please go ahead.
Tell him your name. Thank you, Chairman, member of the committee. My name is Ilya Kudeman, and I represent KBA Fisheries Association. Been a long-time cod participant in Gulf of Alaska, specifically in Central Gulf, but based out of Homer. We have to end this race for fish due to safety as number one priority. We oppose AGR Bill 21 as it is not productive for legislature to insert themselves into complex fisheries. And in JHR 21, there are misrepresentations and incorrect assertions, such as consolidations of vessels, reduction of participants, elimination of crew jobs. So we just would like to ask the council to move forward on this as it's been doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in Homer or on any other sites who wished to testify this morning?
That's all in Homer. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone here in Juneau who wishes to testify? If you would please come forward and state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
My name is Brendan Harrington. I'm from Kodiak, and I'm a fisherman here representing myself. And good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'd just like to start by saying it's an honor to be here and put a personal face on this for the younger generations of fishermen. You've heard some of them on the phone, but it's good to be able to look at some of us in the eye. So, like I said, I'm from Kodiak. I'm 28 years old, and I've been fishing professionally in Alaska all of my adult life, and as a second-generation fisherman, most of my childhood as well. And I've recently begun to make the transition from working on the back deck to running a boat myself, and I'm here to speak in favor of HJR 21, as it stresses the importance of protecting an important public resource and of securing a future for young Alaskans who wish to make a life for ourselves in the fisheries. And the attempt to apply cod restrictions to existing LLPs effectively shuts down one of the few remaining avenues that we have to break into the fishery right now. It would effectively keep us out of the wheelhouse and relegate us to the back decks. As it stands today, the cod fishery is the last major holdout against the tide of consolidation in the industry as a whole. Similar actions have already been taken in other fisheries. I've fished halibut and black cod since I was 14, but I've reached the glass ceiling in that fishery as it's already been apportioned out to private interests, and I don't have the considerable financial resources that it takes to buy my way in. And this is a situation that's found across the spectrum of fisheries, and with the notable exception of the cod fishery right now. The cod fishery is really, it's the last financially viable fishery for young people. And hobbling people by keeping them within the 3-mile limit, it doesn't really work. It's like telling someone that they're still free to paint a house, but not giving them a brush. You know, it's considerably harder to make a living if you're restricted to within 3 miles, or restricted to certain gear types that are less efficient, like jigging, and left out of the fixed gear. And furthermore, I find the justification for the cod restrictions disingenuous at best, and it's bad policy. The way that the system functions now works, the inactive permits serve primarily to keep the market prices for LLPs down to a level which is affordable for young fishermen who are just starting out on their own, like myself. They can be bought for only a few $1,000s right now as it stands. But if you were to compare it with other fisheries which have been limited, in which the permits have been limited like this, then I don't think that it would be unreasonable to assume that they would jump up to $20,000 or $30,000 or even $50,000 right away for an LLP. once these COD restrictions are applied for an LLP that would end up being usable, one with a COD endorsement. You know, when you compare this to IFQs, it's you know, the amount of money needed to buy in is, you know, measured in the quarters and the halves of millions of dollars, and you know, that doesn't even consider the money that it costs already to buy a boat and gear. So it would shut us out. And there's also no evidence that the cod fishery is anything but totally healthy. So in the absence of environmental or biological reasons for doing this, I don't really see any reason for doing it other than sort of protectionism for those who are already established. And it would just further shut us young fishermen out of the business. And also, hearing people compare this to the situation in IFQs just before, I mean, the situation in the cod and the black cod in the halibut industry just before IFQs don't really work as well. There was a noticeable problem in that fishery before the quota was put out there. There was a huge amount of participation. There were, you know, 24 and 48 hour openings. People were getting hurt. That's not going on in the fishery right now. I've been involved in the fishery for the last number of years, and it's not comparable. It's working now. If it was economically viable for these big boats to come in and start fishing cod, then they would have been doing it already right now, and there wouldn't be all of these permits sitting idle right now. But that's just not the case. You know, that it's just these idle permits are a supply and demand thing. You know, if the supply of them goes down, then the price is going to increase. And furthermore, this is kind of a more personal level, and it's been touched on by others today, but I'd like to reiterate. Many boats right now that are fishing in the industry are doing it where it's not profitable for the operation, but they're seeing the writing on the wall, and so they wish to secure a history in the fishing to sort of hedge for the future. And while this might be good for the boat owners and the permit owners, you know, it doesn't benefit the young men and women who are actually working on the boats, and they're being forced into fishing cod for just to break even or even at a loss, just to hold on to their jobs for the more profitable times of year. And ironically, it's benefiting no one but the permit owners, who just wish to, they're just seeking to further consolidate things in their hands. And you know, they're in effect, they're digging their own graves, but they're powerless to do anything about it. It's a sad situation. So in conclusion, I'd like to stress the importance of maintaining fair access to our public resources and of carefully evaluating the unintended consequences that these changes in regulation would bring about. Please help keep young Alaskans involved in the fisheries in a real way and keep the doors of opportunity open for us. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Harrington. Representative Johnson, did you have a question? No. Okay, not seeing any questions. Thank you for traveling to Juneau to testify in person. Do we have anybody else in the audience here today who wishes to testify on HGR 21? And one last time, do you have anybody online who wishes to testify on the resolution? Not hearing any affirmation in that regard. Chair will close public testimony at this time, and we'll move into committee discussion. Representative Osterman?
Yeah, just thank you, Mr. Chairman. One final comment. There were several comments in reference to whether the Alaska State Legislature should be involved in this. Over the years that I was involved, prior years as the legislator, I had that same mental block that the legislature shouldn't be involved. Today, I feel that the legislature should not be involved in the Board of Fish and the statewide issues, because we have abrogated that responsibility to the board, and we should not be trying to tell the board what to do, particularly with allocations. On the federal side, I have changed my mind, and I feel that the legislature needs to be more directly involved with what the North Pacific Fishery Management Council does on fish issues and policy decisions that affect Alaska. To this date, we've not, as a legislature, been involved. And having spent 4 years working for the prior governor and dealing directly with the council in fishing issues, it became more and more apparent to me that the policy decisions by the federal government that directly affect Alaska have very little say from the legislator's point of view. And so that is one reason that I'm here today with this resolution and trying to get to that point where those policy decisions from the federal side, we have some say in as legislator, because it is a policy that directly affects Alaskans in our state. So thank you.
Other comments, committee members?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to move the bill, if it's appropriate. I'd like to make a motion to move House Joint Resolution number 21, and I want to confirm that the version is 26LS0668 ECHO.
That's correct.
And it's a resolution requesting the North Pacific Fishery Management Council that would require to stop consideration of requiring a Pacific cod endorsement. And I'd like to move that it moves with the any attached fiscal notes and with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to the motion? Not seeing any, HGR 21 has moved from the Fisheries Committee. And with that, with individual recommendations, let's stand down for a few moments. Take a brief at ease. At 1124. Next, we'd like to move to House Bill 143. Mr. Swanton, on behalf of the department, if you would come forward and speak to the changes in the bill. And before we do that, however, we are going to procedurally need a motion to move from the committee substitute, which we had before the committee previously. And I think for today's purposes, with the committee's indulgence, move back to the original bill, which basically just continues or repeals the sunset provision of the bill and takes away any fiscal implications. So, Vice Chair Keller?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. I move that we put the original version of the bill, House Bill number 143, back before us, and that's version 26LS0622 Alpha.
Do all committee members have that? In front of them? Okay. Mr. Swanton, do you want to begin your testimony, please?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Charlie Swanton, and I'm the director of Sport Fish with Alaska Department of Fish and Game. By and large, the legislation that you now have in front of you essentially reverts the fee structure back to what it currently is, which it is. In the briefing documents, it shows that a combination sport fishing business owners is $100, and for sport fish guides, it's $50, and the owner operator combination is $100, which are the current fees in existence. You should have a document that I was hopeful to turn around and get in front of you several weeks ago, which is a brief that, by and large, it lays out the background. The original legislation, when it was passed, elements of the legislation in terms of operators' licenses, penalties for violations, and then the utility of some of this information. On that final page of the document, it references electronic reporting, which is a modernization initiative that I did speak to briefly at the last hearing. And that's the intent of what the department is trying to move forward on with reporting of this information, is to get a little bit more modern and get a little bit more timely reporting of this information and reduce the amount of paper that currently costs a fair amount of money to process. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Swanton. Any questions at this time? Committee members? Not seeing any. If you just sit at the table there for a moment, if you would. I would like to, at this point, reopen public testimony and take testimony from three sites. It looks like we have three individuals online at this point. And I'd like to begin with Ricky Geese, who's on an off-net site. Ricky, do you have testimony this morning?
Yes. My name is Ricky Geese. I'm the executive director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. We support the repeal of the sunset provision. We feel that logbooks are an important component of sustainable fisheries management, responsible management, and we support the department's efforts to, of the information that's collected, converting it into data that can be used within fisheries management in a in having a modern, timely reporting system set up for guides when they do the reporting. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ricky. Next, we'll move to Fairbanks. Ken Larson, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Fisheries Committee. I represent the 28-plus members of the Prince William Sound Charter Boat Association and have been fishing as a licensed charter skipper since 1984. We are against the passage of House Bill 143 because we want the fee and guide license program to sunset. We've already submitted written testimony, and I don't want to go over that and just reiterate what's already there. But I will say a few comments. The guide license and logbook program creates a discriminatory double standard, especially with regard to halibut. ADF&G data shows that approximately one-third of the sport-caught halibut is non-guided caught, and two-thirds is caught by guided fishermen. And that's 07 and 08 data. However, only us charter operators have to report it via the logbook program. We've been repeatedly told since its inception that our logbook data is not trusted or believed. It's demonstrated by the requirement for signatures in Southeast and Area 2C, for instance. So what's the point? Actions speak louder than words. How reliable and how trustworthy is the data? We're getting a double standard here. I guess the one benefit of the guide license and logbook program is that it is a substitute for NOAA's recently enacted National Saltwater Angler Registry. But that national registry is at least a lot cheaper than what the current logbook program is. I just want to reiterate again that the Prince William Sound Charter Boat Association does not support House Bill 143 or the continuation of the guide license and logbook program with its fee structure. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Is there anyone else in Fairbanks who wishes to testify?
I'm the only one.
Okay. We'll move to the Matsu LIO, Melvin Grove.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee meeting here. I am representing myself. I'm a charter captain out of Valdez and a member of the Prince William Sound Charter Boat Association also. I adamantly oppose the repeal of the sunset of this fee. The license fee is nothing more than a tax on my business and other charter captains within the state. This fee initially was supported in hopes that Fish and Game would use this the data that we do collect for them free of charge, that they would use this the data to support the growing industry in the sport fishing, the growing sport fishing industry. We have since then, though, have seen nothing but an actual demise. They're trying more of a demise of our industry than to support our industry with this data. Fishing Game and the commissioner has supported the current catch sharing plan that the International Pacific Halibut Commission has proposed, with the allocation of only 15% of the halibut for the public. We're allowing the commercial fishermen to continue to take anywhere from 80% to 90% of the resource. And Fish and Game has supported this initiative and is currently moving to reduce sport fishermen and the public to one halibut per person in Southeast. So in essence, if the Fish and Game wants to continue to tax the businessmen, I adamantly oppose this fee. And if they would like to raise taxes or raise fees to collect data, they should do that on a general license fee increase for all fishermen, not just off the backs of us charter guys who are merely cab drivers for the sport fishermen. So again, I would just like to oppose this repeal and like to see the fee go away. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grove. Is there anyone else in the Matsu who wishes to testify? Is there anyone else online who wants to testify on House Bill 143? Not hearing anyone. Is there anybody here in the audience in Juneau who wishes to come forward and testify? Not seeing anyone, we'll once again close public testimony. Committee comments and discussion. Mr. Swanton, do you want to offer your perspective on what we just heard from Mr. Larson of Fairbanks and Mr. Grove and the Matsu?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like to speak specifically to it seemed to be a little bit of commonality with regards to references to where the data has actually been used in the past. And within the briefing document that I offered for you, we have, and this data has been presented to the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, the International Pacific Halibut Commission, and numerous Board of Fisheries meetings to trying to characterize various aspects and as part of the deliberative process. That being said, the one thing that I'd like to, I guess, highlight is that we have heard over the course of time from various entities the quality or lack thereof of the logbook data versus our other data collection methods. In 2006, we embarked on a process specifically with regards to marine fisheries and comparing a statewide harvest survey, which is a little bit it's a little bit antiquated, but the problem with that is the timely reporting of the information. It's about 18 months in arrears from the actual date that fish are harvested, as opposed to the logbook program, which is a little bit more timely in terms of providing information. We've compared these two data sets for 3 years, and we're in the process of going to be generating a report which will be available in late December, comparing these two as a means with which to how to move forward with a data set for halibut reporting, marine fisheries reporting, as well as other marine. So I guess I just wanted to say that you know, we are trying to address this and trying to find the best means with which to go forward. But the preliminary information on the logbooks is that it's pretty high-quality information. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Swanton. Any comments, questions? Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How long have you been collecting this data?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Book, I presume that you mean the logbook data?
Yes.
1998 in the marine fisheries and since 2004 in the freshwater fisheries, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair.
Representative Book.
Were there other reports, were there other updates, or the report that's coming out in December is going to be the first report, the first culmination of all of this data?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Book, it certainly is not the first, I guess, culmination of the data, using your terms. It is the first comparison that we've done in terms of two different data collection methods, if you will, to see which is more precise and which is more comprehensive as a data set to move forward for fisheries management as well as data collection purposes. I hope that answers your question, Mr. Chairman.
It does. Thank you.
Additional questions for Director Swanton while we have him here at the table?
Sure.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions. I'm reading the bulleted point briefing that you presented us under background beginning. This piece of legislation was proposed by the department in 2004 for three main reasons: information on guide numbers and their activities. We talked a little bit about that, establishing the minimum standards, safety, liability insurance, Coast Guard licensing. I'm reading the statute, and it offers up several things that are required for these charter boat captains and guides to present to the department. I guess my question or comment is, do they already present this information to the U.S. Coast Guard? And then a second follow-up to that question would be, how exactly does this establish any sort of an increased level of safety, in your opinion?
Mr. Swanton?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, unfortunately, I don't have the requirements sitting in front of me in terms of the statutes. but specifically with regards to safety, I think that the one that was being referenced there had to do with insurance that had prior to, had not been required of sport fishing guides, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up, Representative Kawasaki.
So under the there's nothing required under the business license, because they also have to have a business license, the name of their business, business insurance policy number, in the areas in which they'll be fishing. That's just according to the regs.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Kawasaki, I'm not sure of specifically what is the requirements are relative to the business license, but specific to the guide license, it was insurance as well as a CPR first aid. Mr. Chairman.
No further follow-ups, Representative Kawasaki?
No.
Additional questions from the committee? Not seeing any. Thank you, Charlie, for coming here today and also for your time breaking away from the Board of Fisheries meeting in Sitka when we heard the bill a few days or weeks back. With that, what is the committee's pleasure on the bill before us?
Mr. Chair, I'd make a motion to move HB 143, version 26LS0622-alpha, with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations out of committee.
Is there any objection to the motion? Not hearing any. Then House Bill 153 has moved out of the Fisheries Committee with individual recommendations. And at that time, we'll adjourn the meeting here at 11:39 and see you next week.